there. Welcome back to the Pup Puppin' Away podcast. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Maggie.
And this is the podcast where we break down dog training and canine behavior in a digestible way because I am a certified canine behaviorist.
I'm not. I just have the house that we recorded.
You're just the host. No, Maggie's got lots of great insight. She's an unofficial dog trainer. All right, so today's episode is one that I have a lot of interest in.
Because I have no interest in.
You have no interest in
that? I totally can't.
I was like, I feel like your dog's constantly in this. But it's fear periods. Yeah. I've noticed my dog's going through some different sorts of fear periods, and we actually just had a conversation with a really great client about how she's kind of noticing some different stuff too, and how I think she didn't really know that it was a thing. So what is a fear period? A fear period is a time in your dog's life where they seem just a little sensitive to a variety of stimuli. It could be visual, it could be auditory, it could be, I mean, those are usually the two sort of stimuli or senses that are used.
Olfactory.
I haven't had
olfactory fears.
Olfactory. I haven't had that. But I, no, maybe. And I'll explain why a little bit later. Help me remember to tie, let me put that in the notes, to tie in olfactory. Because I think it could become a precursor something that's nervous or scary. Just like, you know, for us, scents have a way to call back a memory and an emotion. Sure, I think that has to be true with dogs because...
I had a ridiculous conversation with somebody about that recently.
About smelling things?
Olfactory memories.
Why? Why was it ridiculous?
Because I was talking about how crayons smell because I had a Volkswagen Bug was my first car. Mm-hmm. And so now every time when it got hot inside, it smelled like crayons. And so I was telling her, like, oh, yeah, every time I smell crayons or anything like that. And she was like, oh, crayons smell like throw up. And I was like,
what?
Excuse, who, what? No, they didn't. Nope. They I think in your childhood, somebody must have thrown up after eating crayons. And that's what you associate crayons with. And she was like, oh, my God. That did happen.
I'm oh, like, my, oh God. My God. How crazy. So, yeah, fear, I think, yeah. We'll get back to, like, smell as being a memory for possibly a trigger. But, yeah, fear periods are not truly – there's not a lot of research about them. I think the biggest fear period that mostly everyone is aware of is the one when your puppy transitions from, like, your puppyhood to your adolescence, which is typically about – 5 to 7, maybe 8 months of age. You know, when they cross over into that teenager stage, they're a little bit more independent. They try to kind of get away with things. They try to test boundaries. And sometimes we see these fear periods happen. So there's not much research about that. But I definitely think that there's more fear periods that are mainly more anecdotal. I know that I've experienced them. And of course, I talk to a shit ton of puppy parents and dog parents. They kind of go through these things, but I think the fear periods, the first one that's well known for, or that we know very well, is why we have puppy socialization, right? Why we have the whole push and the drive to make sure that we are exposing our dogs in a comfortable and positive way to stuff to kind of proof them from experiencing such a heavy fear period. But I don't think that it is preventable to go through a fear period. I think that we can go through it a little bit more softly depending on what sorts of stimuli we built that positive association to.
And the whole graceful fear period.
More of a graceful one, yeah. Well, the whole point of puppy socialization isn't to proof your dog from being nervous. I mean, oh my God, there's going to be things that your dog is going to experience that you couldn't prepare them for. The point of puppy socialization is to make your dog have a better bounce back. So when they do experience something that, whoa, freaked them out, they can bounce back from it faster and, you know, not stay in that startle response for so long. So my hypothesis and kind of what I've seen is that there is a fear period for every life stage change that we have. So once again, we talked about from puppyhood to adolescence, but what about from adolescence to adulthood? Or from adulthood to, senior years. Yeah, golden years. And it's even still hard to pinpoint that because every dog matures differently, you know, especially depending on breed. I always get this backwards. Like, your big dogs tend to age faster because they have such a shorter lifespan.
Nope, the other way around.
It's the other way around.
Because German Shepherds stay puppies until they're, like, 2 years old.
But I'm talking about, like, the big ones, the Great Danes, the Mastiffs.
German Shepherds are big.
They're not giant.
They're, like, almost giant.
I would call them
compared
large.
Compared to a Chihuahua, Chihuahuas, I mean, yeah, are old men by the time they're one. That's how I remember it.
Maybe. Like I said, I normally get that kind of mixed up.
I noticed one.
The what?
The books. They taught me.
The books.
I remember it from Dog Gurus.
Yeah, we did read it something. I remember being so confused by that because it doesn't equate in my brain. But once again, that's the thing is every, like, when is there the actual transition for dogs to have these life stage, you know, shifts? And I don't think that there's enough research around just that, but I do think that when you start to see one change, you kind of see other changes in your dog's temperament, and that kind of tells you that's when you're in a life stage transition, not specifically number of years your dog is. I mean, even like puberty in humans is like a range. It's not like, 13, you know, now you're an whatever.
Grown up?
Yeah, teenager.
Okay.
Well, even grown-ups, like, when are you actually considered a grown-up? Is it 18?
I can tell you I don't know because I'm not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of research that say it's a little bit closer to, like, 25, 26, you know? So once again, I don't think you should really base off of how old your dog is, but more of just kind of what are the general trends that you're seeing in your dog's temperament and maybe some changes in their behavior. And I also just want to mention, like, we as humans create more fears as we get older, too. But kind of opposite too, you know, we've gotten over fears. Like when you're a kid, you're scared of the dark, but maybe as an adult too.
I have less illogical fears.
Right.
I have more like real world fears.
Right, because you have experienced things.
Yeah.
And
I've learned new terrifying things.
Right.
But also I've made sense of things that were silly and scary when I was little.
Yeah. Okay. So let's break that down a little bit. I think the more that a being is on Earth and the more experiences that you have, you potentially could be creating fear based off of those experiences.
Right.
That are more, maybe not logical, but are less illogical. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't sound right when it came out of my mouth. And it just maybe more rooted in the actual meaning. So, once again, so what are the different things that you can kind of tell that your dog is in a fear period? My first one is your dog seems to be barking more often at things that were always there. Have you experienced something like this with your kiddos?
Quinn, I'm not sure I'd go as far as to call her things fear periods or a fear period. But I think it more breaks down to I didn't do a very good job socializing her. So I think she's good about a lot of things, but just like within the confines of when we're home and with just me. Because I'll bring her to work and suddenly she goes nuts at a person.
Yeah.
Just barking terrified at a person. And I'm like,
Oh,
she never does this. She never meets other people. Of course she doesn't do it.
Right.
So I do think we went through some sort of fear period because she did it a lot more when she was younger. And now I don't know if we have outgrown the fear period or if she just became more used to people.
Mm-hmm.
But now she doesn't usually bark at them. She's just kind of nervous around people.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And for Quinn, I wouldn't say that you didn't do a good job of socialization. I think that she
was broken to begin with.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit in her genetics to be sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't imagine what she'd be like if you hadn't done the socialization that you did.
Right.
Barking at things that were always there. The next one is the lean and sniff. I usually see this when it comes to meeting unfamiliar people that we're nervous of or unfamiliar objects that have always been there, but I never noticed it before. I remember Rishi did this one time at the house that we used to live in. There were like fake rocks like along the sidewalk area. And all of a sudden one day she noticed one. And like she's been in the front yard hundreds of times by that point. But the lean and sniff is when your dog's feet are further away from the object and they're kind of like their front, almost their whole body like kind of crouches down. So you see a bend in the front and the back legs. There's also a shift forward, and the neck is outstretched towards whatever they're sniffing.
Yeah, they're stretching towards it, but not willing to take that step forward.
Exactly. And so that position is, I'm comfortable enough, and I'm curious and comfortable enough to want to get information, but I'm ready to pounce the second I feel like I'm uncomfortable.
Do you remember we had that dog boarding, maybe it was a cocker rescue, that all of a sudden was terrified of the little door stopper piece of metal?
Nope.
Oh, my God. That was a weird thing.
Do we have one of those in the facility?
It in every kennel, we have the little piece of metal that sticks up so the dart doesn't swing in.
Oh, that thing.
And one day he noticed it and just went ballistic at it.
Nope, don't remember that at all.
I don't think it's related particularly to fear periods, but it was something that's always been there. And then one day he was just like, oh, my God, what is that?
That's strange.
Yeah.
I don't recall that. Because that thing doesn't move.
No.
It doesn't do anything. Like, it literally just...
Yeah.
Okay. What a weirdo.
Yeah, I don't know if, like, maybe the door had bounced off it and made a sound. Mm. Or, like, he scratched at it and it hit back. And I don't know.
Hmm. Interesting. I don't recall that, though.
I just suddenly had a problem with it. But Corky, it's not always around. But one thing I noticed in my parents' neighborhood when they set up for Christmas decorations, one of our neighbors has a big inflatable thing that, like, a mouse is coming out of a teacup with a little Santa hat on.
Cute.
And it, like, goes down, and then he rises up.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, holds up a sugar cube, whatever. And Corky is terrified of that thing. He, like, the first time it happened, he froze and did the stretching out towards it, and he's like, what is this? And then it moved, and he was like, bah!
Yeah. Did he ever get over it?
I think he got better with it. He was always kind of like, yeah, I see you. But he wasn't like barking at it or going nuts anymore. Plus it's only up for Christmas, so.
Yeah, we'll see what happens this year.
Yeah. I can't wait to torture him with it.
Inflatables are honestly a really big one. Those are super weird. Very odd. Very big. Very, like, just massive. It's just a mass.
And they make that massive thing. Big sound, especially to a dog.
Yeah. They got the sound of, like, the motor filling it in. I think the lean and sniff potentially gets your dog in the most trouble when they're doing it to a person. Because oftentimes people will consider, oh, your dog sniffed me, so it's okay for me to touch, and it's okay for me to reach out for your dog, when really that is the best time to not reach out. That is the worst time to reach out and the best time for you to give that dog that space, because that's the time that the dog is making a decision, right?
Yeah.
I'm careful and I'm trepidatious. Ah, but you moved!
I scare you.
And now you've ruined the moment where trust could have been built.
Yeah, this is the perfect moment for you to prove that you're not a threat by letting them get through this whole sniffing period and being like, wow, nothing happened.
Yeah.
Okay, that wasn't so bad. Mm-hmm. Rather than, I'm going to put myself out here. Oh my God, you moved and this is so much worse.
I immediately regret this decision.
Yeah.
And it amazes me how often people don't recognize that. Even when I'm, like, if I have a client in front of me who is talking about my dog is, you know, has some fear reaction towards people when people come over to the house, we talk about what's a better way to bring the guest in and break down, like, what should you do for each thing. Most of my clients have mentioned so many times, oh, yeah, I have seen that lean, but I always thought it was just okay for people to touch my dog because they were sniffing, so it must have been okay. Like, the dog is making the interaction, and I think that's what people get caught up on. They're not noticing that the dog's trepidatiously, I hope that's a word, making that interaction, and that you moving towards the dog is just the right thing for you to destroy what you could have built trust on.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about some other things to mitigate that in a little bit. When we were building the notes, you mentioned little panic attacks is kind of one thing that you kind of saw.
Yeah, and thinking about it more, I don't know if it was a fear period thing, just like I don't know if anything I talk about is fear period things, apparently. Mm-hmm. But Corky has what I can only interpret as panic attacks. And when they started when he was young, like maybe a year older around there. Mm-hmm. And he will just like come try to find me or hide in a corner and just shake. shiver and shake, and I realize, like, if I put him under a blanket and cuddle him, he'll get over it.
Yeah.
Or he'll fall asleep, and then he'll be okay. But though originally I was thinking that's part of fear period, and now I'm thinking it might just be, like, part of his general anxieties.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not totally sure.
Were you ever able to pinpoint what caused him to
yes.
be that way?
Yeah. When he was little, I tried to use an aerosol spray collar on him to stop him from barking, and that totally broke him.
Yeah.
And then we only used it once, maybe twice.
Yeah.
And he started this whole shaking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then ever since then, he's afraid of squirt bottles, spray
yeah.
cans,
yeah.
aerosol, anything.
Okay.
Or squirty anything. And he'll shake about it. He's gotten better in the most recent years, like the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
But still, if you hold one, he's like way on alert and probably goes to a different room.
Yeah.
And then he also started doing it about bugs inside the house.
Hmm.
Outside, he's fine. He likes to chase and catch bees.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
inside, if there's a fly or a bee, something that can make an audible buzz, he'll freak out about it. And sometimes he will notice things before I do. He'll come running out of my room, tail tucked between his legs,
yep.
come, like, stand with his paws on my knees. I'm like,
yeah.
oh my god, what is it? Is it a
yeah.
bug?
Yeah.
And I go look at my room, and sure enough, in the very corner of my room, there's a fly buzzing against the wall.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's okay, dude, it's just a fly.
So, one of the things that we'll talk about a little bit is fear can compound, but I want to, we're going to go out of order, because I want to address, touch on those issues. Number one, I feel like those are all normal reactions to have. The reason why the aerosol can positive punishment technique is supposed to work is because it's supposed to scare him.
Mm-hmm.
And fear has a really great way of generalizing to different things. So once he got that, was it a spray or was it just a citronella spray that
yeah.
sprayed him? Okay. So that's a sound on a very specific liquid dispersing from something. Which is why now anything that kind of reminds him of those things, we have that sort of that experience. I wonder if the first initial, the time that he first experienced that trigger was in a sensitive time frame. Do you recall how old he was when that happened?
Around a year-ish, maybe.
Okay. I would say maybe. That possibly could be. But I also think that those things were designed to build in a fear.
Yeah.
That's why they work. The other thing that you mentioned was bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Sally also has a very real fear of flies, and I can pinpoint it to a very specific instance. So sometimes I think that these fears come about just because something freaked them out, and fear has a way of compounding and generalizing. And your dog doesn't have to be in a sensitive fear period for it to matter. It just, I think your dog is more sensitive to more things. So for Sully, once again, living in this old house that we were in, we had these window units, right? So, and we would always have essential oils diffusing in the room, which would attract bees. And so bees would come into the bedroom via one of the AC units in the window. And one day I freaked out from it and I grabbed a shoe and I smacked it on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And Sully got really freaked out by that. Now to the point where if he hears anything buzzing, he's running. So if there's, I know, kind of like what you said, I've known that there's been flies or bees in the room before I see them because of how Sully is reacting.
Mm-hmm.
Because now he's associating, oh, this buzz means, oh, maybe mom's going to grab onto that shoe, that chancla, and hit the wall. I don't know, but I wonder, because everything is based off of antecedents, right? So me plus buzzing insect equals mom's gonna smack it.
Yeah, I wonder if he'd react if it was not you around.
If I wasn't around, and I could probably video record it and try to figure it out, but I wonder how much both of those.
Plant a bee in the room, ask Anthony
how much
if he reacts.
Well, Anthony's now kind of become one of the culprits too, so, you know, now with it being summer, we get flies in the house if we leave the door open for too long, and so I can
ma'am, it's fall.
excuse me, we just finished summer. It's only been 2 days of fall, and it barely is like a faux summer or a faux fall. Even if I were to like wave like my hand in the air to like not even swat to kill a fly, but just like shoo fly, like buzz away, you know?
Yeah.
Both of them now have a, like, they kind of like slowly slink
Anthony
away.
Anthony and Sully?
Anthony and Sully both slink away, yeah. but no, Anthony does it too. And Sully's having that fear reaction to him as well.
Gotcha.
Even if like we're eating food, it's enough for Sully to like dip out. The other day he like excused himself all the way into the bedroom, but he was still staring at us from the bedroom. So we looked over and he's just stoic and staring at us like, I really want food, but I want to be away from the bugs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's, I know what you mean by those panic attacks. One of the other things that I want to talk about a little bit later was Sully used to have, when he was going through a fear period from like adolescence to adult. So it happened when he was like 3 years old. I was living in Houston, where it rains kind of unpredictably. He was always fine with thunderstorms. All of a sudden one day he was not. And he would kind of have one of those panic attacks that you kind of talked about, where he would come up to me, he would shiver, he would drool a little bit. He just like would not like settle down.
Yeah.
And that one was definitely contributed to, I definitely think, a fear period, because it was a stimuli that he's always been had.
Yeah,
but now all of a sudden he's super sensitive to it. Nothing traumatic happened, but I think maybe that's the difference between like a stimulus that was maybe not meant to be traumatic, but just happened to be traumatic, versus something that they've experienced multiple times. And now because I'm in a fear period, I'm sensitive to it.
Yeah.
So for Sully, what we did was we just started giving him like those natural stress management things, like Rescue Remedy, put a little blanket over him. And now he doesn't love thunderstorms, but he'll just like come sit close to me. I'll put a blanket on him and he'll fall asleep, even if I don't give him that Rescue Remedy or any other sort of like calming agent
right
now, which has been nice. Okay, we went off on a couple of tangents, so let's center it back in.
Tangents? What? Us? No way.
Never. Last one that I have to kind of notice if your dog is kind of going through a sensitive period is they're not as outgoing to meet new dogs or people. So we kind of find that their circle closes up a little bit more. Whereas I have like young teenage dogs who are happy and playful, you know, could never met an enemy, loves going to daycare. And I think, you know, we're kind of experiencing some of these turns of the age for some of our daycare dogs right now, where they love the dogs that have always been in daycare with them. But now as we bring new dogs, some of them have a little bit less tolerance meeting a new dog that's being trying, like we're trying to introduce into the group.
Yeah.
So I think they're a little bit less outgoing.
That's fear period or just aging and like realizing I don't want to deal with these hyper puppy idiots.
I think it's safe to say that you can't really distinguish the two of them completely.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're probably kind of one and the same. I don't know if it's an intolerance or, like, I wouldn't say it's a fear thing.
Right.
Like, the dogs that I'm thinking about, they're not having fear reactions. They're just, for whatever reason, less tolerant.
I feel like that just, I would chalk that up to they're just
growing
getting
out of it.
Older, growing out of, like, now I don't want this 5-month-old puppy wrestling and causing zoomies, mm-hmm. and I don't know her and I don't know what she's about, and I'm 2 years old and I don't want to deal with your shit no more.
So. You crazy hooligan.
Yeah.
But even some of them aren't hooligans, the dogs that they're having negative reactions to. Anyways, I think that's a conversation for later. But you're right. Is it fear? I don't know. Maybe the topic of this conversation should be sensitive periods, not specifically fear periods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Okay, so next thing let's talk about is how to help your dog get through a fear period. The first one, first tip that I have is identify what your dog is nervous of.
Bees.
We got bees. We have thunderstorms. Is it a specific type of person? Spray things. Yeah, so identify.
Children
is a huge one.
Quinn hates kids.
I really hate
kids. I discovered that because I never have kids around her.
Yeah.
And Corky, one of the wonderful things about Corky is as much as he's kind of unpredictable around most people, I can always trust him around a kid. And I'm, of course, super careful about it.
Yeah.
And like, I know my dog and all that, but I, for whatever reason, I did something right and he's good with kids where he might bite the dad. But Quinn, she met her first kid like a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and just barked like she was gonna die.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, I
never,
list,
never saw that one coming. And now she's proved it maybe two other times.
Yeah.
Damn.
Kids are a strange one. And once again, we're going on a tangent here. Sully had the same kind of upbringing that Quinn had when he didn't really see children, because I had him when I was in college and I was living in College Station. So it was a college town. I don't have kids walking around there. And he met my little nephew once over Christmas break, but didn't spend enough time with him, and it wasn't enough of an exposure for him to be truly socialized to kids. Now he fucking hates kids. So much so that I had to muzzle him around my niece and nephews a couple times, and now my sister calls him Hannibal.
So that I think sucks. We talked about that on the last episode.
Did we? Maybe. Maybe. Yeah, everyone should be very well aware that Sully hates kids. I feel like kids for dogs are like kids for humans. Either you're like, I love kids, or you're like, I fucking hate kids and I don't want any kids of my own. It's kind of like one or the other with dogs too, I feel like
Quirky somehow just knows if I bite this thing, I'm going to get in a lot more trouble if I bite than if I bite a human.
I will be put down.
Grown up. Although, when he was little, my mom nannied a lot.
Yeah.
And
well, shit. We had a very abrupt interruption from a phone call, and we lost track of a good 20 minutes of our podcast because the timer kept going. So we're going to try to pick up where we left off.
So, Quirky. When Quirky was little and going through all his periods, my mom nannied a lot. So she had kids wandering around the house. So mm-hmm. I'm sure he got used to kids that way.
Because there was.
And Quinn there. Didn't get any of that.
Gotcha. Okay, last thing that you may notice if your dog's going through one of these sensitive periods is your dog might not be as outgoing, meeting new dogs or new people. Maybe their social circle has closed up a little bit more. They're just less tolerant of new people, new dogs. The end. We had a lot. It was a better conversation last time.
If only you could have heard it. It was great.
Okay, so those are just a few ways to kind of maybe guess that your dog's going through a sensitive fear period. So let's talk a little bit now about how to help your dog through a period if you're kind of noticing that they're being a little bit sensitive. The first one is to identify what your triggers might be. What are they nervous of? So in our examples, what do we talk about?
Bugs. Aerosol.
Yes. Thunderstorms. We talked about thunderstorms, right?
Yep.
Was that before or after?
We talked about thunderstorms because your
panic
second
attacks.
One...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So identify what your dog is nervous of. Number two, use treats to make a positive association, but be careful not to use treats as a coercion. So I think you said that we talked about this a little bit in a previous episode. When you kind of trying to get your dog comfortable meeting a new person, don't just give that person treats and expect your dog to have a good outcome if the person is only using food to bring your dog closer to them, right? You want to use treats to build a positive association, but not increase the stress because your dog has to get closer to the scary thing to get the piece of food.
Yeah, a drama-free treat.
Drama or trauma-free?
Both.
Yeah. And I think just to reiterate for some of those that maybe did not listen to that episode, because I can't recall what episode that was, but it's better to have the person toss food away and over the head of the dog. So that way the dog has to turn away to grab the food, but then makes their own decision, not because of the food, to come closer to the person that's scary.
And I say, oh, this scary person is dispensing treats, so maybe I'll go a little closer so they don't have to throw the food as far because I want to, not because
they're making
the food is so much closer to that person, so now I have to walk up on that person.
Yeah, don't be the scary witch that kind of, come here, child, come here, to get me closer. Another thing is find a way to water down the trigger, build those positive feelings using those reinforceable things like food, and then work your way up from there. So my example of this is I once had a client who the dog was severely afraid of the vacuum cleaner. So we escorted the dog out of the room, we brought the vacuum cleaner in, we laid it down, we sprinkled treats on the vacuum cleaner, but once again, I don't want to use food as coercion, so we also sprinkled treats around the vacuum cleaner and also really far away from the vacuum cleaner. So the dog was able just to come in, have a feast.
It was just a room piled of treats.
Pretty much. And a vacuum cleaner in the middle, right? So not using food as coercion, but we also laid the vacuum down because things that are standing, kind of like what you mentioned about those inflatables that we might see during holiday seasons, things that like are vertical, things that stand, things that are taller, usually have a higher propensity to be nerve-wracking for dogs.
That's why dogs love me so much. I'm short and stout. No, just keep going. I'm taller than vacuum, Stephanie.
This is very true. Yeah, touche. Vacuum cleaners also make noise, right? They growl and they lunge towards the dog and go away and lunge towards the dog and go away.
So and vibrate the whole floor. They make the lights dim.
Yeah. And they also maybe have a little bit of a light on it. So with this client, once the dog was comfortable, and this took multiple sessions, it didn't happen in just one training session. So once the dog was comfortable with that, then we started to have the owner bend down, grab the vacuum handle, treat, 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 and then let go of the vacuum and stand up. Once the dog was comfortable with that, then the owner started to grab the vacuum, stand up with it, and you know, kind of have it more in that incline like you would a vacuum while you're vacuuming, toss treats, toss treats, toss treats, stop, and then put the vacuum down. And each rep, each session that we did, we got a little bit closer to, okay, now I'm moving the vacuum without it being on. Okay, now it's playing, now it's on, but it's in a different room. So I have the auditory and I'm building it up in a softer way to limit the volume. And then as time, more reps that we did, the vacuum cleaner now came in. So we worked on auditory. We worked on visual.
Did you have a vacuum bag for the olfactory?
We actually did not do that. That might have been an interesting idea for us to do.
So this all happened in like 1 hour long session?
No, it happened multiple times. Like I gave them a step-by-step plan. So they would, in the session that we did, I did a little bit with them and then I gave them, okay, once your dog's comfortable with this thing, now move on to this step. Once your dog's comfortable with this, now move on to this step. And it took probably, they were great clients and they worked on it a little bit every day, probably 2 weeks for us to get through it. But another thing too is you definitely need to find a way to manage that stress a little bit too. Things like CBD, rescue remedy, pheromone collars or sprays, other things that we talked about in our Calm Your Pits episode that we're not going to dive into a bunch here, because while you're trying your best to water down that trigger as much as possible, there still might be a little bit of stress that your dog is experiencing, and that little bit of stress could be enough to, you know, halt learning or halt your dog becoming more comfortable with those different things. Another interesting thing about helping your dog work through something is if we don't water down the trigger enough, or if we don't manage that stress enough, even like delicious food like hot dogs, cheese, or chicken might not be enough for your dog to feel comfortable enough to eat if they're that nervous or scared. So if you have a dog that's pretty food motivated and they're not eating, that's a window and a gateway into that brain that's telling you that they're already that nervous that they're willing to not even eat food. So find a way to water down that trigger and manage that stress during your training scenario. All right, and the last thing that we've kind of mentioned a couple of times, but one that I wanted to bring about, because I think we've talked about Rishi's fear about this in a previous episode, but once again, that fear can compound and it can generalize to different things. So once upon a time, I tried using one of those high-pitched ultrasonic beepers in an effort to get Rishi to stop barking. My goal wasn't to scare her. My goal was just to kind of disrupt her so that way I can, you know, okay, you stopped barking, now come here, sit, now let's redirect. But she was fucking terrified of it. And now anything that kind of makes a beeping noise, she's also very nervous of. So first I noticed it with my air fryer. When the air fryer was done, it'd go ding, you know, to let you know the food was ready. She would start to freak out before the ding happen. It wasn't like she heard the ding and then she'd freak out. She would freak out while the food was cooking. So I can pinpoint this maybe to two different reasons. Number one was kind of that olfactory trigger that you were talking about. Maybe she knew that once things were smelling, like food cooking, or maybe she can tell the difference when something's cooking from the air fryer because maybe it smells different. But that was a antecedent to the impending sound, the impending doom sound of the ding. Or it possibly also could have been the dial trigger because it would tick, 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 you know, for the whole 10 minutes or whatever, and then the ding. So I thought maybe if I use the air fryer in a new house, maybe she wouldn't feel that way. Haven't tried that, but she has now realized that if we leave the door open of the refrigerator open long enough, it'll ding because it's telling you you need to close the door so it can cool back down, right? So this happens most often when Anthony is unloading Gatorades into the fridge. So she started to get savvy to, once he puts a box full of Gatorades on the counter, that's when it's gonna happen. So she would start to get nervous just when you put like bulky things on the counter. Because Anthony is kind of a weirdo and he gets his Gatorade from Amazon. She then learned that when Dad comes in through the front door with a bulky package, that he's gonna set it up on the counter, that he's gonna open the fridge, and that there's a potential that it's going to ding. So when he brings in a package, she starts to have a nervous breakdown. A nervous breakdown, that's a tough word. That's kind of being dramatic, but, and one of the questions that, you know, we've had is why doesn't she like learn to get over it? Because nothing bad has ever happened to her. And fear is just weird that way, that if you don't do something to either match the level of fear or to be even great, more reinforcing than that level of fear, it's gonna stay there, you know?
Yeah, I'm terrified of airplanes. None of my family or I have ever died on an airplane.
True.
But, and my dad goes on business trips regularly and it doesn't lessen my fear. But maybe right. If I got $100 every time he goes on an airplane and doesn't die, then I would be more likely to like airplanes.
I think you have to find some sort of way to maybe like you're in an airplane setting, but you know that you're on the ground.
And then I get $100?
Yes, and you get $100 and like nothing, like the plane did not move. And then the next time, now you hear the sounds, maybe it's some sort of like simulator, so you feel the things moving and you get $100. And then eventually we start, okay, now we're just gonna taxi and you get $100. And then the next time, maybe not the next time, but until you're comfortable with that. Each time it gets bigger and bigger. Of course, yeah. You just don't have access to water down your airplane trigger.
No. Probably wouldn't work either. I'm too broken.
Yeah, I think we could. Stress management, watering down your trigger, something to that you find valuable enough to override that fear.
About $100.
Could probably work. $100 would be nice. So yeah, I think... that wasn't as pretty as the first one that we did, but...
Oh, God, we're done again?
We're done again.
Ugh. We're done again in half the time.
We both got tired. I got hungry, and I want to eat my dinner. But we went through the notes just fine.
Cool.
We just gave less commentary.
Oh, my goodness.
Plus, we got dogs barking in the background.
I didn't talk about my pits.
You didn't talk about your scratched-up pits? No. So, yeah, way less commentary. All right, guys, I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you find that your dog is going through a fear period, what were some of the things that you noticed or are noticing? But hit us up on Instagram. Tell us about that. We also are now, we have been on TikTok for a while, but trying to grow that platform a little bit more. And then you had another announcement.
If you're free October 22nd, we are having our second annual Halloween Fest. Bring your dogs if they are public friendly. We have costume contests, we have vendors, we have a photo booth area.
Games, activities.
Maybe, probably, possibly some activities.
We'll be there.
Yeah, come meet the staff, come meet the owner, come meet the Maggie. Come show me your dogs and I'll pet them a lot. October 22nd, 6:30-ish to 9:30-ish. Go check our Instagram, go check our... Well, I guess that's probably Facebook.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
All right. Talk to y'all next week.
Come party hardy.
Adios.
Bye.
As always, the fun doesn't have to stop here. Find us on all of our socials. We're on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at PupPup and Away SA. Feel free to leave feedback or ask any questions about this topic or any desired future topics by DMing us on Instagram. Please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to. Share us with a friend. And if you're ever so inclined, please feel free to donate. Nothing reinforces me more than money, besides food, and that might be why I get along so well with dogs. I hope to see you guys soon.